You're listening to the Arctic Circle podcast. In this episode, we listen to a discussion on geothermal energy as the solution for heating and cooling of cities. Speakers in this session are His Excellency Guðlaugur Þór Þórðarson, Icelandic Minister of the Environment, Energy and Climate, and Chairman of Arctic Council in 2019 to 2021. Haukur Harðarson, Chairman and Founder of Arctic Green Energy, Eirikur Bragason, COO of Arctic Green Energy, and Charlotte Sao, CFO of Arctic Green Energy in Beijing. This event originally took place at the 2023 Arctic Circle Japan Forum. It was organized by Arctic Green Energy and moderated by its CEO, Sigurður Atli Jónsson.
Heat is often overlooked when people talk about energy. Everybody focuses on megawatts, on electricity. But if we look at the big picture, only about 17% is the contribution of electricity in the global energy usage. So if you add up all the electrical grids in the world, that's amount to under 20%. But heating and cooling is where half of the energy, more than half of the energy gets used today. And this part is going to grow tremendously over the next decades as we see more and more countries switching over to high quality heating, and cooling is being added. Cooling is 70% of the human population lives in areas that need cooling. So that's going to be a huge growth in the future. So let's talk a little bit about where does this geothermal energy come from? If you look up on sunny days, you see our sun. But there is another one underneath our feet. We have two suns. The one you see, that is 150 million kilometers away. And inside the Earth, about 3,500 kilometers under our feet, there is another sun. We don't see it, but it has the same temperature as the sun you see in the sky, about 6,000 degrees Celsius. And this is the origin of geothermal. So while the core of the Earth is warm, there will be enough geothermal. The hot water we extract from the ground is simply a medium to transfer this heat to the ground. And of course, hot water is only one of the medium that we use for geothermal. Geothermal energy for heating is really, really important. And we are reminded of this over the last year in Europe, where we have been reminded of how important the subject of energy security is. But looking at geothermal, it is renewable. It is baseload. It's the only renewable energy that is baseload. It's available 24 hours a day. All the others are peak loads. You need batteries to keep them or energy storage solutions when they're not on. And as we have shown in Iceland and in other countries where we have been working, geothermal is a very profitable business to be in. It doesn't need the subsidies that some of the others need. And as for energy security, geothermal is a domestic energy. So you're not dependent on energy logistics. And this is a big, big problem in Europe today. The war in Ukraine caused a crisis in the energy landscape. And so there was a shortage of energy, and energy prices in Europe went through the roof. In the meantime, nothing happened in Iceland or cities around the world where we are working. There was no disruption in the quantity of the energy and no price fluctuations. One of the largest infrastructure projects the world will see over the next decades is the energy transition on how we transfer the heating of cities, which is 85% today, driven by fossil fuels, over to clean energy. And of course, geothermal has the ability to lead the way. So in my opinion, this is the next energy revolution, how we transfer the heating and cooling of cities from fossil fuels to sustainable energies like geothermal. And geothermal is the only renewable that is baseload, so it always has to be the backbone of these systems. There is a lot of challenges that we are facing because some countries, they do treat geothermal not as a renewable, but as something we mine from the ground or as fossil fuels. So this is one of the reasons, for example, why it has been slow to pick up in Europe. It's still not fully recognized as a renewable, and that is more to do with the strong lobby power of some of the competitors. Now about my company, Arctic Green. We are a developer, owner, and operator of geothermal heating systems. And we are the industry leader, in my opinion. For example, our joint venture in China is by far the world's largest geothermal district heating company. And if you see some of the numbers that we have achieved, by the end of this year, we will be heating close to 100 million square meters of floor space. We have over 1,500 heat pumps operating. We have over 850 geothermal projects operating in our where we are, and we have registered close to 200 patents. And in China, which has been our biggest market, we have about 35% market share. This is an overview of what we have been doing. We are all based on the Icelandic knowledge, so we have our knowledge center in Iceland. And this is where the sort of magic was first created. And then we have been busy exporting this in China. We are serving about 70 towns and cities. Very interesting new developments in the Philippines and the United Arab Emirates, where we are working on geothermal cooling, which is going to be an absolutely huge market. And then our headquarters are in Singapore. Typically, how we do this, how we transition cities from what we call suffering cities with dirty air and lots of pollution to clean cities like you see in Reykjavik, is that we start by drilling about 2 kilometers into the ground. We take up the hot water or brine that is there. We take out the heat of it, use it to heat and cool, and then we send the liquid back into the ground. So net, we are not really taking anything from the ground. So this is fully sustainable if it's done in a responsible manner. And there is a lot of things that we have developed in-house that are quite special in the industry that makes us different from our competitors. For example, we own the most valuable patents in the industry, the re-injection patents, how to re-inject the liquid into the ground when it's done. We are also able to use much lower temperatures than many of our competitors. Most of our competitors are focusing on temperatures over 90 degrees. We have been able to successfully use down to 40 degrees. And another thing that we actually learned from Iceland, we hide our energy infrastructure in the urban landscape. We don't build imposing power plants for heating. When you come to Reykjavik, you will not be able to point out where our boreholes are, where the Icelanders have hidden their energy infrastructure in the landscape. This is very, very important when you are doing the transition for cities that may be beautiful historical cities. Another thing that is worth mentioning is geothermal plus. Since geothermal is the only baseload, we use geothermal as the backbone of multi-clean energy systems. And so we add onto our geothermal systems whatever renewables are available locally. And through our information, through our energy management systems, we integrate this seamlessly. So we are able to offer the local community much more than just the geothermal potential of that area. Maybe this picture is a little bit too technical, but it's an overview of what we do. We have two types of geothermal resources, the high temperature, which is great for electricity, and the low temperature, which is even more important because that's perfect for heating and cooling without making electricity as an intermediary. And then we sort of use the low temperature through heat exchangers or absorption chillers to provide heating or cooling as needed. And we are on the cutting edge of geothermal. We have successfully registered close to 200 patents. We are adding a few dozens every year. And there are some very, very interesting development that we will be launching this year at the Global World Geothermal Congress, either ourselves or with our partners like Sinopec. So these have to do with geothermal cooling and geothermal heat pump fields, where we drill multiple wells and serve a community with both heating and cooling without drilling into liquids, and also very sophisticated information systems for digitization and optimization of our systems. China is the market where we have been most active in. That's our sort of the star in our crown. And we are working in about seven provinces in China. We started in Shaanxi, one of them, and have slowly been growing. And we are now a national showcase, or a joint venture, a national showcase for harnessing, exploring geothermal energy in China, and drilling as well. And we have, our joint venture there has already exclusive rights to some of the most valuable geothermal resources. We have over 930 heat centrals operating. I said 850 before. Apparently the latest numbers are 930. So, and we have drilled over 900 wells. Each of these wells is about 2 kilometers deep. So while many of our competitors are only at a few wells. What is very, very interesting is the carbon savings potential of geothermal energy. Just this year alone, our existing operations will be saving over 5 million tons, or avoiding over 5 million tons of CO2 emissions. And the company has grown quite sizable. During peak seasons, we have over 2,000 people working on this in China. And this shows our growth in China. It's been quite amazing, I think. And we are not only a commercial company. We established our geothermal training program in China in 2019. And this training program, here you can see the first graduates in the picture. Capacity training is so important for geothermal, because there is not a whole lot of people in this world that do understand geothermal. So we need to educate young people. And this effort was led by the late Dr. Guðni Jóhannesson, who was one of our advisors and the Director General of the Icelandic National Energy Authority. And this is something that we are quite proud of, and the people that we have trained. Most of the professors are from Iceland, by the way. And about the cities of tomorrow, you will see dual energy systems. One is electricity driven and other is driven by water. And geothermal needs to be the backbone, any fully standalone renewable energy system. It can't really be standalone if there is not a baseload backbone. And geothermal is the only renewable that can provide that. And then we are very proud of our artificial intelligence energy management systems that seamlessly integrate geothermal with other energy sources and constantly monitor and optimize the flow and the temperatures in our wells and system. And one by one, we will use these technologies city by city to create carbon positive cities. Thank you.
Hey, thank you, Haukur. So apparently it is working. We'll now have some discussions in the panel over here. We have four panelists, and if I may introduce them one by one. We have Minister Guðlaugur Þór Þórðarson, Minister of the Environment, Energy and Climate in Iceland. So please, Guðlaugur, if you take a seat. Well, I think it's you are the first one, so you can make the selection. So he's on the left wing, which he usually is not. And Haukur, of course. And then we have Charlotte Zhao, the CEO of Arctic Green Energy in China. Of course. And Mr. Eirikur Bragason, CEO of Arctic Green Energy. So we'll hopefully have some interesting discussions, and we'll definitely make sure that it will be time for some Q&A towards the end of the session. I think we have one microphone, isn't it, over there? So we'll need to share that one.
It's working.
And Minister, if I may start with you. You obviously had a long and successful career in politics. Closer, yeah, like this, yeah. You've been Minister of Foreign Affairs and Minister of Health and Social Security before. And in 2021, you took office as Minister of Environment, Energy and Climate, which is an interesting and a little bit long title. But the ministry in this shape, it's a recent one. And sort of before we start talking about geothermal and the Arctic in particular, maybe you can explain a little bit the rationale for having the affairs of the environment, the energy, and climate change under one ministry, and what is your experience so far?
Well, thank you. You could ask the question, how is it possible to deal with this not in one ministry? Because it's so closely connected. Haukur mentioned a little thing, which was, for example, then he was talking about the cities in Iceland, how we hide the drilling holes or the boreholes, yeah, and the infrastructure. And because it's always some kind of a balance with nature and also making green energy. And you have to look at both sides when you are making decisions. And if you don't have it in one ministry, then you at least need to have the ministries working very closely together. And it can be complicated. You would think maybe that with such a small population in Iceland that we wouldn't have problems working together in two ministries, but it can be complicated even with a small population, let alone with a larger one. And I think that talking about our experience, then every time I talk about geothermal, as I've done a lot because you didn't go through, unfortunately, it didn't go through all my long CV when it comes to public offices, then we have a story to tell in Iceland. And it's something that we actually been complacent because we take things for granted. But you are always really surprised to see how little has been done using this energy, as Haukur rightly described, like while we live on this earth, then we have the geothermal, and you don't need to be the most active volcanic island in the world. But everyone who comes to Iceland take it also totally for granted that we are harnessing the geothermal for heating up the houses. But it wasn't an easy battle to take. Actually, it was a political struggle. And we used coals to heat up the houses in Reykjavik for a very long time. And one could say, why on earth did you do that? And we did not only use coals, we also used gas. And we had a gas station, imported gas, for 50 years. And but it was exactly the same dispute and the discussion we are having now, that the ones who said we are not going to do something that has never been done before in such a scale, like use geothermal to heat up the houses, they said, we know gas, we know coals, That's something that we can take for granted. But fortunately, we had brave people when we were extremely poor who made these decisions. And this is probably the single best decision Iceland has made, using geothermal, or harnessing geothermal for heating up the houses and letting to make electricity. And we base more or less our economy on this cheap, reliable, renewable energy. And we found it so closely now when we have, after this horrific invasion of Russia into the Ukraine, and you saw the prices of gas going up everywhere, then we also realized something that we have known but not discussed a lot. It's also a national security issue. And of course, the Icelandic economy were in much better shape than the ones who were dependent on Russian gas, to just take one example. So the experience so far is good and a positive one, but strangely enough, then we have been a bit complacent, Icelanders. We have taken this for granted, and we haven't really looked for geothermal for the last 10 years. There's not enough in Iceland. It's just a question of harnessing it. So we are working very hard to build on what we have, because we need a lot of green energy like the rest of the world, and we see a lot of opportunities, not only for domestic use, but also for cooperating with others, especially, obviously Japan, because in every geothermal plant in Iceland, there is a made in Japan turbine. And but also others, because I think it says it all that what Arctic Green has done in China, for example, with this one city which now has the largest geothermal district heating in the world. It's no longer in Reykjavik, and it's but we feel fine being in second place. But I think it says it all, that just this one district heating system in China saves more CO2 than the whole emission of Iceland. So I think if we put it in that perspective, then just think, what can we do with the rest of the world with a proven technology which we have used for more than almost 100 years. So I can tell you, it works.
Thank you, Minister. And maybe on that note, and the cooperation between Iceland and China, and I mean the title of this Arctic Circle Forum is Asia and the Future of the Arctic. Clearly, Iceland is associated with the Arctic, and you mentioned both Japan and China as large economies in Asia. Charlotte, you've been involved in the cooperation between China and Iceland. Iceland being a volcanic island, and geothermal is clearly associated with volcanic activity, but China is not known for volcanic activity. How is geothermal utilized in China?
Well, thank you, Otley, and really appreciate Minister speaking so highly of our cooperation. China is absolutely not a volcanic island, but what is more fascinating is that China is blessed with the world's largest mid and low temperature reservoir. So that is the best solution, in our opinion, to solve the clean heating issue. It is economic, it is very affordable for ordinary people, and also the technology breakthrough that has been done over the past years has helped the solution being like even more sustainable. So like in China, in recent years, the Chinese government is very determined on climate change and sustainable goal. China has declared a very ambitious goal about the carbon emission peak at 2030 and carbon neutrality in 2060. So we call the 3060 like ambitious plan. And we are very glad that over the past 17 years of collaboration between China and Iceland on the geothermal, that we have witnessed the transition of legislation that is getting very, very friendly to the geothermal industry. So we are very happy to see that in the 3060 plan, the geothermal played a vital role in especially focusing on the clean heating. And also, it's actually this year in October, the Chinese Energy Authority, China Energy Authority, will be hosting the World Geothermal Conference in Beijing, following Reykjavik, following Iceland. So I think in general, the government focus has been very supportive to the industry.
Thanks a lot. And Haukur, maybe over to you. The minister mentioned Japan as well. And clearly there is a geothermal industry in Japan. Again, here we have a volcanic activity. But we also have geothermal spas, the onsen. The development of geothermal for heating, can that coexist with geothermal power generation and geothermal spas? In your opinion, you know, how can these different types of utilization coexist?
In my opinion, they not only can they coexist, they can actually greatly benefit each other. And I encourage all of you to come to Iceland. There is a very special place there called the Blue Lagoon. It has lines of tourists waiting in every day to get in there. So the Blue Lagoon exists right next door to a geothermal power plant. And last time I looked, the Blue Lagoon was worth a multiple of the geothermal power plant. So this is a perfect example, but one of many, of how these two industries, they are not opponents. They can coexist and benefit from each other. They can draw revenues and jobs from the same geothermal liquid without spoiling anything for each other.
And in terms of going into new markets for Arctic Green as a company and utilizing a resource that it's not widely known. It's known in certain circles, but it's not widely known. In your mind, what is the sort of the best inbound strategy? How do you market this type of resource and for Arctic as a company? Who do you prefer to work with in different markets?
We are experts on the geothermal energy and how to harness that. So what we always try to do is to team up with strong local companies. Our preference has been to work with energy companies. Like in China, we have been working with Sinopec for, I think, 17 years. It's been an ideal partner because Sinopec starts out as an oil and gas company. And with our help, they are gradually moving to renewables and geothermal. And geothermal is perhaps a very natural way for oil and gas company to reinvent themselves because we share the drilling knowledge and the subsurface knowledge. But sort of the short answer to your question is that Arctic Green always prefers to work with the best local partners. And one of the things that we hope to accomplish in Japan is to find an interested local partner here that would like to work with us.
Thanks, Haukur. And Eiríkur, if we go over to you, you have an engineering background and you worked on geothermal projects all over the world, including working with companies here in Japan. Where are the greatest potential for geothermal cooling and heating solutions?
Well, the greatest potential for heating is obviously in colder places. Here in Japan, it's in the north Japan, and it's in North Europe, but it also needs to combine or be in places where there is a geothermal potential. Where the best locations for a very successful geothermal project is where we have a good geothermal resource. We have a big market that is connected with heating grids. That is the best locations for successful projects.
And where in the world do you find existing heat grids right now? It's probably the sort of the easiest way to start, isn't it?
Yeah, that is in Europe, in many places in Europe, in especially in East Europe, where we have many thousands of heating grids in operation. Heating grids that are heated with gas, oil, and coal. Just an example, we are working on a project in Budapest. Budapest is a city with 3 million inhabitants. It's in a geothermal field, which is ideal for utilization. The city has very extensive heating grids, but they are importing gas for heating up water and distribute it in the grid. But what we are doing there is we are starting a project where we drill wells and connect the geothermal fluid to the grid. So that is in our mind a ideal place for geothermal heating. But in terms of countries, then we are also very excited to meet here companies in Japan. The utilization of geothermal energy here in Japan is not very high, especially for in heating. Although you have clearly a very high demand for heating, especially in the North Japan. And you have also good resources that can be utilized for heating.
The minister mentioned or explained the history of geothermal and how it started. Iceland was obviously reliant on imported fossil fuels, coal, oil, gas, and then gradually made the transition towards geothermal. But presumably that involved a transition period, investment in infrastructure and so on and so forth. In your mind, Minister, is this a lesson for others? And do you see a role for Iceland, the energy cluster in Iceland, and even your ministry in sort of supporting this transition, not only in Iceland but abroad as well?
Yeah, I see geothermal as a low-hanging fruit in the fight against climate change. And as been mentioned in the lecture before, then the heating and cooling is that's the large challenge. If we would solve that, then we wouldn't have a problem with climate change. It's just as simple as that. But of course, it's not as simple to make it happen. But what we do, what we can in cooperation with others, then I am mentioned the ministry to encourage others to use our experience for greater good. Because you mentioned before, we are of course a part of the Arctic, and we find climate change at our homes. The emission is not doesn't come from the 4 million inhabitants living in the Arctic, but we are the ones to feel it the first, and we are all facing with the same challenge that we want to fight climate change. We want to go from fossil fuels to green. And here is the thing that is so obvious to use. And also more on more positive notes, but because we tend to get to talk, well, it can be a bit depressing to talk about climate change and the effects, that there are so many positive things that comes out of geothermal. And if you haven't been to Iceland, then you have to come to Iceland, and you will feel it with the swimming pools, with the spas. And again, you don't need to be the most active volcanic island in the world to use that for your to a pleasure. But it also we have all kinds of innovative businesses who comes out of using geothermal, and there seems to be endless opportunities there. So in short, we will do what we can, because it's in our interest that the whole world will succeed when it comes to the fight against climate change. And believe me, we know this is a low-hanging fruit, the geothermal.
So it's not not only the development of the geothermal district heating facilities and the infrastructure and so on and so forth. You're also saying there are all sorts of associated benefits, R&D, new companies, new ideas, and so on and so forth.
Definitely, and we wouldn't grow exotic fruits in Iceland if it wouldn't be for the geothermal, just to make one example. And actually, in the 30s, when they were taking the debate about should we go geothermal or should we stay with the coal and the gas, then the political forces who were saying vote for geothermal, because that was the slogan, vote for geothermal, they were promising greenhouses at every home in Reykjavik. Well, it didn't. There were quite a few greenhouses, but not at every home. But you could say instead the spas came, and people have hot tubs at their homes. Strangely enough, now when we had this horrible crisis, energy crisis in Europe, the Icelandic tourist companies, the ones who were getting people over to Iceland, and we have a big tourist industry, could have said, come to Iceland in the winter and feel the heat. Because our friends in Europe, it was a cold winter. While in Iceland, of all places, it was still very warm, at least inside. I'm not promising anything outside the houses.
No, that's. I think that's pretty wise of you. That's where your experience comes in.
Exactly.
But Charlotte, you have actually a hands-on experience of developing geothermal in a new market in China. So what were the challenges in both in terms of, you know, utilizing this technology that has been developed elsewhere, accessing markets, and then also making this a commercially viable business?
I would say if we're coming down to the business perspectives, the first that definitely comes out is the technology itself. I think that's the essence of the collaboration between China and Iceland, between Arctic Green and the Chinese company Sinopec. The technology helped the company have sustainable solution and the most economic solution. And I will keep improving the efficiency of the system and to make sure that, like I mentioned, ordinary people can enjoy this energy without costing anything extra. So in combined, other than Mr. Harker Hudson has mentioned all this data, like 900 wells, 8 provinces in China, I think what we are very proud is that we are providing in combined like 2 million people not only the residential customers, office buildings, but also schools and also hospitals. Nowadays, not only heating, but also cooling. So people can enjoy this very healthy energy without extra cost. That is, I think, what we have been working very hard on. And then about the market, well, as within China, everybody knows that it's a very highly populated place, that people need heating. That's the basic need. And also the energy transition headed by the government has created a very friendly environment for the company to grow. So we call it retrofit, is that we take the original coal-fired solution plants and then do all these modifications and retrofit, make it suitable for geothermal. And also at the same time, the technology has enhanced the company's ability to co-generate with other clean energies, even the waste heat from the refinery and also from the waste to energy. So we are best use of geothermal as a base load, but not necessarily being like a pure geothermal. And then if I may say the the last, but in my opinion, the most crucial is actually the awareness and acknowledgement of the energy itself. As a minister was talking about, the campaign of Vote for Geothermal is very, very important. I think if people can spend time understanding what is the energy itself, and it can be used not only for heating, cooling, but also for agriculture, for many other perspectives that make your life better, I think that's something also very important.
Yeah, and the you mentioned the awareness, very important point, I think. What is your feeling with regards to sort of the public awareness towards geothermal? I mean, there is a fixed heating season, and the priority number one is, of course, that the homes are sufficiently heated and they are nice and warm. Do people realize where the heating is coming from? And would they, for example, vote for geothermal if they were given an opportunity today?
Right. This is something that we're also working on. It's actually last year, we sponsored a exhibition at the China Museum of Technology. So that for students to understand geothermal, they say like the coal, like this, geothermal, this, solar, this. So it's very important for people to feel it. And the most, if we, I would really love to invite you guys to visit many of our plants. People were imagining a heating company plant being very dirty with all this smog and coal, but it's not. Even within the compound of 200,000 square meter compound, and we can have a very small place, even underneath the parking lot, that we install everything, because geothermal, you can barely see anything on the ground. And those places, before we do this job, were the place to store coal. And also, that's something that the ordinary residents, they have a feeling, they know what is going on.
And maybe, Haukur, you've maybe been on the other end, that is to say, not promoting this directly to the public, but to the decision makers, and for example, you know, partners in other countries. How do you sort of create that awareness, and how do you get people to you know, vote for geothermal and coal thumbs down and geothermal thumbs up and all that?
Well, you actually hit on the perhaps the greatest stumbling block of geothermal development, because one of our biggest challenges has been to educate decision makers. There is a lot of politicians, except this one, of course. Some of them are very, very suspicious towards geothermal because they cannot see it, and they worry about things. Does it cause earthquakes and all these types of urban myths that exist on geothermal? It's actually quite easy to understand solar and wind because you can see it and feel it. But geothermal is mysterious. It comes from underground and nobody quite understands what it is. So many of the countries that we have to deal with, we have to first start by helping the politicians through the regulatory framework changes to move geothermal either from the Mining Act or the, you know, the same legal bulks that cover gas and coal and into the renewable sector. So this is probably the single largest stumbling block, for example, in Europe. So educating decision makers is really, really important. And this is where the example of Iceland really is important. And every time we send, Iceland sends its ministers abroad, that they educate their colleagues. The public is actually easier to get to appreciate geothermal because, I spoke to an old man in China that was one of our residents, and he was telling us that in his youth he had to throw a rock into the fire and put it under his bed to stay warm. And he actually lives in a very, very warm apartment today. It's all heated by geothermal. So people are very quick to understand the benefits, and the benefits they actually don't only feel because they can see it on the atmosphere. It's amazing to see how fast, when we change a heating system of a town, how fast the air cleans up during wintertime. Of course, in the summertime, the air is always clean. There is no heating going on. But in the wintertime, if you have coal heating, you have black skies, you have black clothes. And I remember one trip in the middle of China in the winter, there were children playing football. You could see them from waist down, from waist up, they were invisible. There was so heavy pollution. And this is in an area that we actually largely cleaned up today, you know, six, eight years later. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Pretty powerful description. Eirikur, but only based on the hard facts, is geothermal, and the geothermal technology. How does it compare sort of comparatively with other incumbent energy, like coal or natural gas?
Well, in terms of cost, it can very easily compete with gas heating and oil heating, mainly due to two reasons. The geothermal infrastructure lasts a very, very long time. It's difficult to say how long because the oldest wells are still in operation. The oldest well in Iceland was drilled in 1921. It's still in operation and going well. So the other reason is the operational costs are very low. The geothermal heating systems are, from a technical point of view, very, very simple. And very cheap to operate, and this results in very competitive prices. The heating prices, for example, in Iceland are the very much lowest in Europe, for example, because everything is heated with geothermal. It's same in Hungary, for example. I'm talking about Hungary because I know that market also. The areas and villages where there is geothermal heating is offers the lowest heating prices in Hungary today. In the areas where there is conventional heating with gas, the prices are approximately four times higher. And people are struggling with heating through the winter. So this is one of the strongest benefits of geothermal development, that long term we can offer a very attractive business models.
Thanks, Eirikur. We have a few minutes left of the session, and I would gladly like to invite the audience to ask some questions. Do I get some questions from the audience?
Uh, My name is Halldór Jóhannsson. I actually live now in Akureyri in the north of Iceland. When I first moved there, they were just implementing the hot water system that we have there now, and I can vouch that at the time nobody believed that there was hot water actually in that region. Now we have Humble hot water, and it's a very good investment. I just wanted to ask, because Haukur, you mentioned the competition and how to compete with the oil and gas companies. Do you think the new CO2 quotas and that development is going to affect your business, and in which way? And then, of course, also when it comes to the image, the EU and its communique in 2021 on its Arctic policy states that oil and gas and coal should stay in the ground. So there's a very firm political commitment, I would think, but how is it actually affecting the business, and do you see it, is it just a dialogue or is it actually a commitment?
Well, there's a lot of people that definitely talk more than they actually do, and that is sometimes true for these policies. It takes sometimes a long time to implement, and the carbon trading discussion is a perfect example of that. It will be a great benefit to our geothermal industry, because if you transition a city from, let's say, coal heating to geothermal, the carbon that you avoid is tremendous, because this is baseload. It's always on. But global community still hasn't got together on a proper carbon trading mechanism. So we have like 20 regional markets. Each of them is different. And then you have the business to business market, and the official markets have all kinds of funny conditions, like what is called additionality. You basically have to prove that your project is not profitable if you don't get the carbon trading thing. So we need to clean all of this out of the system. But when it will be finally functioning, and hopefully we will see that in the next few years, it will be a great tool to push companies and towns and cities to transition to geothermal or clean energy. Of course, I'm a little bit biased towards geothermal. I admit that. But the others are good too.
Yeah, I think we have another question.
Yeah, my name is Pétur Ásgeirsson. I'm the Arctic ambassador of Iceland. There's been a great discussion of the need to move away from fossil fuels for heating in the Arctic, but community leaders in remote Arctic communities have been hesitant on the basis of cost. Can you comment on that?
If there is anything that my company has accomplished, if you want to just distill it down to one little thing, is exactly this. We have proven on a massive scale that the most economical way of heating and cooling a city is geothermal. You can compare it, whether it's coal, whether it's gas, or any other heat resource. We have all these calculations. And so you get really the environmental and health benefits as a free bonus, because it's actually what we do is cheaper than any of the competitors to the public. So people are left with more money and a better quality of life.
So do you have some more questions? Please.
My name is Mead Treadwell. I'm former lieutenant governor in Alaska, and it's very good to hear your presentation. I only caught part of it at the last Arctic Circle. We have tried to drill Mount Spur, which is about 90 miles from Anchorage. And the potential is that if there is hot water there, you could bring it all the way 90 miles into town. And we are a fairly concentrated community, and we would benefit from we are having a natural gas shortage right now, and we also would benefit from the heat melt or the snow melt in the community. This has been a particularly snowy year. There was a group from Iceland who competed for the leases last time, did not win the The company that did win didn't find hot water and discontinued their drilling program. And I guess I'm just wondering, I know there's an opportunity there. The volcano occasionally showers my lawn with ash. What can we do to present this as an opportunity because it would be very significant for us?
Wants to take this? Erikur?
Yeah, thanks for the question. This is actually the challenge that many countries are dealing with. And this is exactly where governments are stepping in and offering grants for the exploration. For example, in Germany, there is a program for funding the first wells. So if you can prove that there is a resource close to your village, then it's a very easy and kind of a routine process to utilize the energy. But this is the challenge to confirm the resource. That is either done by three-dimensional seismic measurement or by drilling exploration wells. And this is always a matter of a few million dollars.
If I may add to this, is we actually, even if we have done a lot in geothermal, we kind of avoid the greenfield risk because that could very, very soon drain funds of any company if you don't succeed. But there are, in almost any locality, there are some wells that have been drilled for maybe other reasons, maybe water wells, maybe gas wells or whatever, or you have deep mines. And all of these things can provide you, or some of them could provide you with the same answers that you get from an exploration well. So, and this is something that we have, I think, been quite successful, is to find available data before we, put an exploration drill into the ground.
Yeah, this is also the reason why we prefer very much to work with oil and gas companies. They have priceless data, and I'm sure there are companies in Alaska that can assist you with data.
Have you reused oil and gas wells that may be depleted, for water heating or?
No, we have experimented with using old wells, but we actually prefer to drill new ones. But the information, the data sets that we can draw from the original wells, that's where the real value of those lies. And where we have been working, we have been fortunate to plug into the existing data. So, sometimes I like to say we have drilled 900 wells and not one of them has been a failure. That's true, but none of them was a sort of shot in the dark. They were all based on us knowing from existing data that it would be a bullseye.
Okay, well, I think we're going towards the end of the session. I would like to thank my panelists, Minister Guðlaugur Þórðarson, Charlotte, Haukur, Erikur, thank you very much for your participation, and the audience for your attendance. Thanks very much.